The hailing frequencies are open, patrons, because I'm Jason Inman.
And I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson, but you already knew that because you are beautiful, sexy people who support us here on Patreon. And today we are joined by a very beautiful, sexy guest who we have been desperate to get on since episode zero of Geek History Lesson. Dan Jurgens came back. Can you believe? Welcome back, Dan.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Well, we just want to say to the listeners that Dan Jurgens is fucking amazing, just flat out the gate, like flat out, and we're so happy to have him here. Dan, so we're going to talk loosely through, you know, your career and some of the amazing titles that you've worked on, because like you mentioned in the main show, I don't think a lot of people realize that you did a year on Aquaman, and then you've touched so many characters. And so we're going to loosely dabble through your career. And the first question I want to give you is, I know your first work for DC was The Warlord, number 63, mm-hmm. which is also, I don't know if many modern readers even know about Warlord, but that's a great book. And Mike Grell did some astounding work on that. But how did you get that first issue at DC Comics? How did you get your first comics work?
Oh, okay. Well, at that time, so you mentioned Mike Grell. And Warlord is a character that Mike had created, that he both wrote and drew and had brought to DC, and it was still being published. You know, he started it probably around 74-ish, 75, somewhere in there maybe, and it was still being published. And at this point, we're talking 1981. I was in Minnesota at the time, and Mike was making a personal appearance at a comic book store here. And I stopped on the way home from work one night, and I was working in a corporation within their corporate art department. And we did a lot of defense work and a lot of, because they also did the flight control systems for the space shuttle. So I had a portfolio that was built with all sorts of space shuttle drawings and tech drawings and military layout drawings,
yeah, illustrations. So a portfolio that wouldn't look normal to a
In other words, it lent itself to comics.
Yeah.
I stopped and showed Mike my stuff, and I also had just some comic type things I had done there on my own inside it. And he said, you know, it just so happens that we're kind of looking at changing artists on The Warlord, and I want you to take that and send it to my editor. And his editor was a young woman by the name of Lori Sutton. And we sent the work in, and they gave me a test of like 5 pages that they also gave the same 5 pages to another artist. And they picked mine. And they said, okay, we'll give you 3 issues to see how you do. And I did my 3 issues, and they kept sending me scripts, and I've been hanging around ever since.
I feel like if it had been maybe 4 or 5 years later, this could have been your origin story for how you went on to design every part of a Star Trek show.
You might have worked on The Next Generation. Yeah. That is crazy. Well, I mean, besides being a luminary creator, I didn't know that we had Mike Grell to thank for launching Dan Jurgens' luminary career. So thank you, Mike Grell.
Yeah, 100%. All kudos to Mike. And I think the other thing that may have played a role in this, and I only found this out later, I think when Mike said, you know, take a good look at this guy's stuff, I think he also made it sound a little bit like I had been working as his assistant or something. So,
well, good for him.
Grease the wheels. Yeah.
Good for him. Wow.
Yep.
So I want to kick the door open on Tangent Comics.
Whoa!
Because that's a favorite of Jason's, and that is a very weird is not the right word. I'm going to say very
unique,
specific.
Unique.
Part of comic
book. That's why I love them. They're so different. That's
history.
Why I love them.
Yeah. So were you involved in Tangent from its inception? Like, did they come to you and they're like, we have this wild idea and we need Mr. Jurgens to be a part of it?
No, I went to them with it.
Yeah.
So it was, I mean, seriously. So I was always fascinated by this idea of how DC came around to do the Silver Age, right? And I had talked to Julie Schwartz about this a few times, and this idea of they took the names of the Golden Age characters like Flash, like Green Lantern, and they just re-envisioned them a little bit, right? Some changed a lot, some didn't change that much. And what I was captivated by that. I mean, like, what a great opportunity. And I basically went to DC and said, what if we did that all over again? And as an example, I said, so think of it this way. Let's say we had never had Batman, but you had the name Batman. And maybe what you ended up with was a character that would be more like Man-Bat, who, you know, showed up in the 70s, to replace Batman. And I said, it's just a different way of taking all these names and rethinking of them. So you take the name Flash, and it's a young teenage female character who's like a light burst who moves around in a flash of light, just, you know, blinking through a room. And the Joker becomes almost like a heroic character in a way. I think the precursor to Harley Quinn.
I think you're exactly right on that too.
Yeah. And I said, and we take Green Lantern, and it's a lantern. Nothing but a lantern. It's really about a lantern. So I actually, you know, went to DC and talked with everyone there, and they said, okay, well, if we did this, how would it work? And so what I did is I wrote the Bible for the universe. I wrote the pitches for about 30 different, maybe not quite 30, more like 20 different characters or properties. And then what we said is we'll pick out our favorite 8 or 9 and give those quick, you know, 2-paragraph pitches to different writers. So for me, I took the Doom Patrol just because I love the name, and the Atom, which I said would be the heavy hitter of the universe. And we asked other writers to come in and take names like Nightwing, which now was more of a paramilitary type organization instead of an individual.
Secretly my favorite one. Just going to throw that up.
Okay. Yeah.
And, I don't think that's, you know, a secret.
No, right. No, I just thought, like, I think you were great on that. That was like, that's also what I just so jive with that concept, because I do think that Nightwing is the perfect name for like a black ops sort of organization. You're just like, yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'm learning that Dan is a futurist and has all of these ideas that wind up becoming really popular in slightly different, like, this is the Earth One series that DC is doing right now in a larger format.
That's great.
There,
yeah.
And in fact, there was a point here rather recently where the Tangent Green Lantern, which I still think is this wonderful concept of kind of this spooky character that wanders through a cemetery with a lantern that can bring someone back to life to basically right an injustice that killed them or something like that. That there were plans to move that character into the DCU in a fairly prominent role. They fell apart, sadly, but I still think there are concepts within the work we did on Tangent that are still very much worth pursuing.
I agree. And yeah, I remember that Green Lantern popping up a few times in regular books and stuff like that. I will tell you that, yeah, the Tangent trades, including Tangent Superman's reigns, are ones that I will never give up. And I hunted those down, and I wish DC would do a super deluxe, awesome version of them with some new artwork and stuff like that. So this is a question. You're a creator now, Dan, that is very rare. And that is, you are a creator that not only writes, but you draw as well. And that is something that we don't, outside of like Jeff Lemire and other various people like that, that's very uncommon nowadays. And I want to ask you about, you know, back in the 90s, when you first started doing Superman, you were writing Superman and drawing Superman, and you've done this on many books. You did this on Booster Gold even. What is it like to write and draw the same book? Like, how, when you're writing, how far ahead of your pencils are you? Like, how does this process work?
That's a really good question. And it doesn't always have the same answer, because every project is different. I think that I invested a lot in trying to become a writer and making sure I was always thought of that way. I didn't want to be the novelty act who would write here and there. I said, I'm going to write, I'm going to commit to it and make sure I'm invested in it so that people think of me that way. So, you know, whether it was something like I first started writing Superman, I think in 87 or 88, right in there. Whether it was that, whether it was Flash Gordon, whether it was Justice League, whether it was so many other things, it was a way to become totally immersed in a project. And, you know, the strong part of that is when you're totally immersed, you are totally dependent on yourself, but you get it to come out the way you want it to. On the other hand, what you do lose out on in many respects is that creative synergy you always shoot for on any project. That as a writer, when I was writing Thor, for example, to get J.R. Jr. on the book the first couple of years and Andy Kubert followed him, I mean, to strike it rich with that sort of relationship is great if I'm drawing something only. And I think an example of this would be when I was drawing Green Arrow for a couple of years that Grell was writing. I think we were kind of really functioning extremely well. And you get that sort of creative synergy. And it's my long-winded way of saying that there are pluses and minuses to both. But ultimately, I've always said, were I ever an editor, I would really help develop artists to become writers. Because when they get to that level of total immersion and they are just, you know, 120% invested in that project and nothing else because there is time for nothing else. I think the product you get is really, really interesting. And we saw that through the 80s with, you know, like Chaykin on American Flag and Grell doing John Sable Freelance at First Comics. And you had Frank doing his Daredevil stuff at Marvel and Walter doing his Thor stuff at Marvel and John Byrne doing everything he did with FF and so many other things, Alpha Flight, that there was something in those products that we love and we respond to it because I think we realize that the commitment that is there, that is on the page, is like above and beyond. And that later, that even replicated itself when the Image guys formed and were doing their own books. And it was, you know, whether you liked them or didn't like them, the commitment was there. And I think readers buy into that.
So you mentioned Marvel, and we would be remiss if we didn't ask you about some of your Marvel work there. And
including a Captain America run that's pretty great.
That's very true. And you've done like three characters who would be considered cornerstone characters now, Thor, Cap, and Spidey. So which was the hardest and which was the most fun?
That's a fucking good question.
I got Dan to swear. Yep. I'm just going to put this badge on my shirt now.
See, what listeners don't know is that was the primary goal of this entire exercise. You know, to me, Cap was the hardest one. Cap is a difficult character to write. And I think it's because more than any other hero in comics, it seems to me that Captain America is tied to the world outside our window, right? That there is something about Cap, whether the writer is intending to or not, that often ties into what is going on in the world around us. That is the truth of Captain America in terms of his origin, and I think it's been true ever since. And somehow, I think when we think of some of the best Cap stories, it's often the ones that were tied into what was going on outside the window. Yet therein lies a bit of a trap, because when you're doing it, you can reflect some of those things in a long-term sort of play. But if you're working on Cap when something happens like the tower's coming down, and we think of Cap's role in safeguarding America, you suddenly feel like you're a failure somehow, right? And I think that is both the wonder and the majesty of a character like Captain America. And like I said, it can also be a trap because all of a sudden the rug can be pulled out from underneath your feet. He's tremendously fun to write and tremendously fun to draw, but there's also this incredible temptation with Captain America where, and I think every writer gets seduced by this to a certain extent, where You want Cap to stand up and make the speech of all speeches, right? I mean, more than any other character in comics, Cap gets on the soapbox and he'll make his speech.
Yeah, because he's the general of generals.
Right. But, you know, there again, is that what readers want? And that's always that fine line. And I've always said, yeah, I'm always fascinated by the questions I get, which say to me, well, why did you do Superman and Thor? Aren't they the same? It's like, no. One is a god and he embraces it. The other one is from another planet, but he's embracing humanity. They're totally different. And Superman leads by quiet example. Superman never would say, you have to follow me. Superman doesn't even want to tell people to follow him. He is a leader by quiet example, and people just defer and follow. Cap, on the other hand, makes the speech and people follow. So there is the difference.
So, Dan, you've worked on so many characters, Marvel, DC, even Valiant, all these other companies. And I want to ask you, this is like one of my favorite questions to ask creators, and especially luminary creators yourself, that seems to have almost touched almost every character in the Marvel and DC universe. But for you, is there a character out there, and it doesn't even have to be Marvel and DC, that you would love to write and work on that you have not at this point?
There are characters. Well, the part of the problem is I've gotten to do everybody just to a little bit.
I know it's you and Len Wein have touched everyone in the comics pantheon, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, and in many respects, it's more like, well, who would I like to spend time with that I haven't? And I have always found Tony Stark, Iron Man, to be incredibly compelling. I've always thought that would be a lot of fun. And in some ways, and I think it's because, again, Tony Stark is so human and he's fallible, right? More so than a lot of heroes. And I appreciate that with him.
I'm just imagining what you would design for the armor. Because you are a fan. I mean, you're
already thinking about action figures. I can see it in your eyes.
I'm like, what is this Dan Jurgens Iron Man? We're recording this in a room where I have a war machine behind me. So it's all good, man. That's a great choice. And also going back to your sort of portfolio full of space designs and missiles, that would really fit in. Wow.
Right. Yeah. Not only that, but one of the things we were doing back at that time, and this is awful type stuff to think about, but you know, we were doing all these charts and things with kill ratios.
Well, it was the right in the middle of the Cold War. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if something detonated, if this happened, if that happened, there was a lot of work with actually surface to air missiles and shoulder mounted weapons of various kinds. So yeah, it'd be good.
Yeah. So I'd like to, as we wrap this down, embarrass Jason by telling the story.
Oh boy.
So a few years ago, the one and only time Jason and I went to Emerald City Comic Con, I had to fly back early and Jason was still in Seattle. In the condo that we were living in, the building next to us was on fire. And we were told, okay, pack up the things you love and leave. And I had to call Jason and say, what would you like me to pack up while I can leave? And the one thing Jason asked me to pack was...
The one comic thing.
The one comic book thing was your Death of Superman, the collection that Jason had since he was a kid that he got you to sign him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was the only comic book I was like, make sure that makes it outside. Yeah, yeah. I had forgotten about that.
So, that's very flattering. Thank you.
I will never forget that.
We can share a picture of that. Because we can tell the story to the patrons that I remember when I gave that to you, Dan, because, you know, it has been read so many times. It has this giant crease right down the middle. And you looked at it and you were like, boy, you sure have read this a lot, haven't you?
I'll never forget the first time I did a convention in Mexico City. And so this was mid-late 90s, did a convention in Mexico City. It was just huge, lots of people. And as I sat down signing, virtually every single comic that was given to me to sign had been read to the point where it was coming apart. And as a creator, it's incredible how much value you place on that, because you come to find out someone bought it and his brothers and sisters read it and the cousins read it and they traded around the neighborhood. And it meant and I should also say that sometimes when people gave me these things, they apologized for the condition they were in. And I'd say, no. It meant people loved it. That's what we want to know. And as creators, to find out that your work has touched someone that way, that it's an honor. And so in some ways, in this world of slabbed plastic encased comics, to get the ones that are dog-eared and the cover is coming off and, you know, the pages are a little worn and everything, it's an honor.
Well, it was always an honor to moderate any panel for you, and it's an honor for you to come and do the Patreon podcast and the regular episode with us again, Dan. So, listeners, right now at the time of this recording, Boo and Gold, number one, and probably multiple episodes if you're listening to this in the far future. Boo and Gold by Dan Jurgens and Ryan Sook on DC Comics is in all your comic book stores. It's on Comixology. You can find it on Amazon. Go pick it up. Go buy it. We've read the first issue. It's great. Dan, please let our patrons know where they can find you online once again.
There are two places where you can find me online. You can email me through my website, danjurgens.com. There is a link there, so you can send me an email. The other place is, and where I'm probably hanging out even more, is Twitter, where I am the Dan Jurgens.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for joining us on this extra special episode.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
This was great shit. It was a fucking good, great time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And patrons, thank you so much for your support. And I hope you enjoyed this episode where we got Dan Jurgens to swear. I'm Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
Goodbye, super friends.
Bye.